Welcome, everyone, and want to welcome, we have a presentation this morning that will center, and I'll get to it in just a minute because I have a couple announcements, but it'll center around assessment and testing. But before we do that, I'd like to let everybody know that our council, Ann Marie, had a baby girl last Saturday. Maren, a little baby girl, her name is Maren. And we also have a new council that is filling in, Darren Corte.
Yep.
And Darren comes to us, comes to Minnesota from DePaul Law School. So he's the one that you'll be talking with if you have legislation or questions about in the next few weeks and months. One other issue that I think at least some of you have known about is that the constitutional amendment that passed in November related to arts and outdoors, and it had a provision in it specifically. It was actually the provision goes like this, that 19.75% shall be deposited in the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and may be spent only for arts, arts education, arts access, and to preserve Minnesota's history and cultural heritage. And so we'd like to have a we've been calling them working groups, subcommittees, kind of interchangeable, but Senator Scogin, Senator Rummel, Senator Saxhog, Senator Olson, and Senator Koch will comprise that group to kind of assess that issue and where that we'd like to see that money be spent. But right now, in little negotiations with Senator Cohen and some others about the exact provision, but we will move ahead on that. We'll also be working on or having a working group on integration aid, and we haven't actually got that totally nailed down, but I just want to let you know that several members have expressed interest, and I think it's been it's an area that we would like to work on and see what we can come up with. And we'll also be bringing, or as soon as we get the information and stuff, get the governor's budget so that we can start going through that and in more detail. So today, we have, oh, wait, one last announcement. Tomorrow, we'll be dealing with the investment in early childhood, and Senator Saxhog will, I believe you've been involved in the Blandon Foundation, that whole area, and Senator Clark and Senator Bonhoff, so. And there's probably others. So we'll be working or bringing that before the committee tomorrow. Today, though, a very important issue that will try to get some good discussion going among our members relates to assessment and testing. And as you know, Senator, there's been a working group on assessments and testing that Senator Wieger has been chairing. And the issues, if you could maybe just very briefly lay out the issues and we can just identify the problems that we have to try to address in this group in the next few weeks or months. Senator Wieger?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, you recall in December we had a joint hearing with the House, the Policy Committee, regarding the grad test, the graduation required assessment for diploma test, something that the legislature mandated in statute. And this test, which is going to be taken by 11th graders April 14 and 15, about 65,000 of them, has one provision addressing mathematics, and the estimate, as you'll recall, was that the majority taking that test probably wouldn't be proficient based on estimates. And so rigor has hit reality with the possibility that many Minnesota students might not walk the stage and get that diploma in December. That said, we've talked about what can be done. There's remediation required in statute, et cetera, but we have met four members from the Senate, four in the House, as well as a few other stakeholders with the Commissioner of Education to talk about a short-term and a long-term way of addressing the assessment of students. And we are meeting this Friday at 10:30 to talk about short-term, to see if we can sign off on an agreement, which I'll highlight, and then a long-term setting a framework for that as well. But we have a priority right now on the short-term. We're looking at the cut score or for proficiency in mathematics that may be lowered a bit, and we'll have more information as to what that would mean. But clearly, it would mean more students would pass. It doesn't mean everyone would. But then we would still require those students to go through remediation courses at least twice. And then tentatively what that compromise would be, if the student has sought remediation twice and there's courses that would be available, they can test every other month for that. If they still haven't succeeded, we think most will. But if they still haven't, and then they've met other graduation requirements for attendance, et cetera, set by the board, then they could get that diploma. So short term, we're looking at that framework, and we would need to tell the school districts we need to make a change, because the state law statute does say that you would not get that diploma unless you are proficient in mathematics, and there's also the other proficiencies in language arts, but mathematics is the area we're focusing on. So short term, we'll meet Friday to discuss that, and then the broader issue long term is testing. We all agree that there should be standards, expectations of students, and we all agree generally that we need to measure what we're doing. To see how well we're doing for the benefit of the student, for the teachers, for parents, for us as a state. And we're looking at these assessments, we're going to hear from some experts shortly today on that subject. But the question as to whether we might look at an exam, end-of-course exam, for example, where you can get 72-hour feedback on how you've done. That potentially could be done for algebra and for geometry. We're looking at some of the advantages, disadvantages for this, as well as the implications for the comprehensive MCA, Minnesota Comprehensive Assessments, for the third version that would be done. So it costs money to do these tests. We do invest, I think it's over $20 million, and I believe Dr. McQuaid did a background memo on that for us before. And if we do look at end-of-course tests, that will have a financial implication as well in a tight time. So we will have recommendations on some short-term suggestions. There will be legislation that will be coming forward in the next few weeks, because we need to give direction to the school districts, and particularly for those 11th graders that might be at risk right now. And so we'll have those suggestions, and then longer term on testing, what we're going to going to do, and that basically would be the overview.
Thank you, Senator Wieger. That gives kind of a framework, and then I'm going to have Dr. Michael Cohen kind of go through, lay out a little more of the picture, and obviously there's lots or several different options, and so hopefully we'll get into a discussion. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, can you all hear me?
If you could state your name for the record, please.
Yes. My name is Michael Cohen. I'm the president of Achieve, which is an independent, nonprofit, and bipartisan organization. We were founded by the nation's governors and business leaders in 1996. And in brief, our mission is to help states improve the quality of standards and assessments and build support for high-quality, sustainable, standards-based reform. So the issues that you have immediately in front of you are issues that we have been working on with states around the country. So we bring some research to bear on that. We bring some experience of other states to bear on that. And we hope that we can help you today and in the future move forward on that conversation. To put a little bit more context around this, particularly since you're focusing at the secondary level right now on assessment, Minnesota is part of an initiative that Achieve created in 2005 called the American Diploma Project Network. You are now one of 34 states that are participating in that, and in fact are one of the leading states in terms of developing policies that help align the expectations for what students need to learn when they complete high school so that they're actually well prepared to face what comes next, either in post-secondary education or in the workplace, particularly in workforce development programs, because it's quite clear now that almost every job that will pay well, that will lead to a career, that has some advancement potential, are jobs that require some further education or training beyond high school. There are not a lot of them that a high school graduate can walk into without any further education or training. So we've been working with states to help design a set of policies and strategies that will improve the preparation of young people as they leave high school. And I will get into that in some detail as I talk this morning, but that framework, I think, may help you think, take a step back from the immediate challenge that you've got in the very short run, and at least provide a context and framework for thinking about the choices you have to make about the kind of assessments that will be most useful to you in Minnesota. I should tell you that in addition to my presentation here, Minnesota is one of eight states that is participating in something called the College and Career Ready Policy Institute, which is a very intensive program of technical assistance and supports to leaders in eight states that were selected competitively because you're the nation's leaders on these issues. And it's designed to help you wrestle with the next set of policy issues, including assessment and accountability. So you've got some ongoing support from Achieve and other organizations, including Education Council, Jobs for the Future, the National Governors Association, and the Data Quality Campaign. All of those organizations are working together to help create ideas, options, strategies, research evidence that can help you wrestle with the issues that you're involved in. So you've got access to some ongoing support here that, in fact, we've been part of your discussions up until now. So just wanted to make sure that you understood this. For us, this is the beginning of a conversation. Doesn't need to be the end of it. But let me talk a bit about the American Diploma Project Network, what it's about, what Minnesota is doing it, and how it relates to the issues you're facing. Over the course of 2002 to 2004, Achieve did a fair amount of research to basically look at the question of how well prepared are young people when they leave high school, and what does it take to be prepared in terms of academic skills. So, first thing we found out, and this is probably familiar to all of you now, but it was eye-opening to us as we collected the evidence, there are way too many people who earn a high school diploma who actually are not prepared for what they're going to do next. Nationally, 30% of first-year college students are required to take one or more remedial courses. They're not eligible to do credit-bearing work, often in math, sometimes in they lack the skills in reading or writing. So they have to take remedial courses. They pay college-level tuition for it. They don't earn college-level credit for it, and their odds of completing a degree are cut by about 50% compared to their better-prepared peers. So there's a significant number of people who've met the graduation requirements who lack the skills they need to do what comes next. Achieve did a national survey of recent high school graduates in 2004, 18 to 21-year-olds who were 1 to 3 years out of high school. And we basically asked them a series of questions about how well-prepared they thought they are now that they see reality from the point of view of an 18 to 21-year-old. 40 to 45% of them said, you know, now that you ask, there are some significant gaps in the skills that I bring to either the college classroom or the workplace. I'm not as well prepared as I need to be. We surveyed employers and college faculty who could not agree more with them. 45% of the employers who hired young people out of high school told us that those students may have the skills for the entry-level job but lack the skills to advance in their company. So they weren't going very far. Faculty who taught credit-bearing courses estimated that more than 40% of the students they were teaching, these are the kids who are not in remedial courses but in credit-bearing courses, more than 40% of them lack the skills they really should have to do that college-level work. Other researchers, American College Testing Program, ACT, independently found that about half of the college-bound students who took their test lacked the reading skills to read at the college level. And these are either kids who graduated from high school for whom there's evidence that they're not well-prepared, or students who are en route to graduate from high school and plan to attend college, who are for whom there's quite strong evidence that they're not well prepared. Senator Wiggers before talked about rigor meeting reality, right? What makes the issues you're going to be dealing with so challenging is that there's one way that those meet in the short run, right? But in the long run, kids who lack rigorous preparation run into reality whether they have a high school diploma or not. And the challenge is to make sure that the diploma ultimately guarantees that they have the rigorous preparation they need to succeed. So this challenge that you're facing, the short run and the long run, will push you in somewhat different directions, potentially. It is not, you know, at the end of the day, there's no way to duck the fact that kids who are poorly prepared aren't going to do well after high school. This evidence that I pointed out about poor preparation led to a second round of research that was achieved it in partnership with a number of D.C.-based organizations, the Fordham Foundation, the Education Trust, which occupy very different ends of the political spectrum in Washington. National Alliance of Business participated as well. Won't go through this in detail, but we spent 2 years working with employers and college faculty to look at the work that young people do when they leave high school, to try to understand what are the prerequisite skills that students need to have to do that work. So we didn't just say, what do you think would be good for kids to know? We said, show us the work they do. Let's see if we can analyze what skills are needed in order to do that work. The major finding from that work is that there is a common core of knowledge in mathematics and in English that's necessary for success in the college classroom and in the workplace in 21st century jobs. The notion that, at least in math and English, students need different preparation depending on where they're going was kind of blown out of the water by this research. The message was very clear. In those core subjects, wherever students are headed, there's a common core of skills that are just essential to have if they're going to be successful after high school. And again, ACT did independent research on this and came pretty much to the same conclusion. I won't go through details of what those skills are. We've got a whole book of them. But one of the tools that developed from our work, which we use later on, is a very specific list of knowledge and skills in math and English and communication skills. Thank you. That is really essential for young people to have when they complete high school.
Can we ask questions now?
After having done that research, the next thing we did was ask the question, does anybody need to master those skills in order to earn a high school diploma. Do I see a question over here?
Yes. Senator Olson?
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Cohen. I'm interested in, you said you don't want to go over the details, but how accessible is that to, and how what plans are there for getting that word out to the people that are a part of that process of preparation? You know, we for years have tried to, how do you make that link between the high schools and the college for them to even ask the question is, what is it that you're looking for? So then how can we address it before? And it doesn't, it just doesn't seem to happen very readily. Is there, have you got any,
any
ideas of how to, how to break that barrier?
First of all,
Dr. Cohen.
Yeah, our list of benchmark skills, we call them the ADP, American Diploma Project Benchmarks. Those are on our website. Every state that has been working to define college and career-ready standards, including Minnesota, has used them extensively. We work very closely with states to help them understand their research, what we found, what those skills are. We've also worked with more than half the states, again, including Minnesota, to facilitate dialogues between K-12 educators, post-secondary faculty, and the business community to arrive at some definition for the state of, again, in math and English, what are the college-ready and career-ready skills that students must have. So for the folks who are in the first instance in the business of developing the state's standards, right, we've got a very extensive and intensive process to work with states to help them do that, both by providing our own research answers but also helping them figure out the answer for themselves in their own state. We put out lots of other materials that are designed more for the public and more for local educators, particularly to help people see how is all this advanced math actually used in real life after high school. And we've got a series that we'll be happy to share with you that looks at how math is used in careers that do not that do not require four-year degrees. Assembly line worker in a Toyota plant, for example. What's the advanced math that they're using? How do they use it on the factory floor, right? And what kind of education and training did they need to be able to do that? So we try to make very clear what the link is between what sometimes seem like pretty abstract, distant skills to what people actually do who earn a real living and hopefully have jobs that'll, you know, that will last.
Thank you.
So we looked at, after we identified these skills, we did some research to try to figure out, does anyone actually have to learn this stuff in order to earn a high school diploma? We had a more technical way of phrasing that in the research, but that's basically what we were asking. So what we did is we looked at the standards that states set. Throughout our history, we've probably worked with 3/4 of the states reviewing their standards in one way or another, and it was quite clear to us that when states developed standards in the 90s, the fundamental question they asked was, what can a group of experts in the discipline come to consensus as to what would be desirable for young people to learn? They didn't ask the question that we think is the more fundamental question, what's the evidence about what young people need to know and be able to do after they leave high school so that they'll be prepared? It's a very different kind of question. Most states had asked the first one. Few had asked the second. The math skills that we identified would typically be learned in a typical high school by taking mathematics through Algebra 2. There are other ways to package the content, but that's the way you would most typically encounter it in high school. In 2004, there were only 2 states in the country that required students to take math through Algebra 2 in order to earn a diploma. Most states required only 2, possibly 3 years of math. They rarely specified anything beyond Algebra 1. Maybe they specified geometry. But in the main, the message to kids was, you don't need to spend much time taking math, and at the state level, we don't have a lot to tell you about what math is actually important. It seemed to be a problem to us. We looked at the graduation tests. About half the states, including Minnesota, require students to pass a test in order to graduate. We looked at those tests in half a dozen states, not Minnesota, but Ohio, Texas, New Jersey, in some other states that aren't Massachusetts, Maryland, and one or two other states that's not immediately leaping to mind. What we found was those tests basically measured 7th, 8th, or 9th grade level skills. States typically gave them in 10th grade. So if you lived in the state, people told you your kids were going to have to take and pass a 10th grade test. A more accurate statement would have been your students will have to pass a test that measures middle school skills when they are in 10th grade. That is, the 10th grade was when the test was given, not necessarily what it measured. In fact, we found for the math test that the math students need to demonstrate in order to pass these math tests was the equivalent of what students in other countries typically learn in 7th grade. Makes me wonder whether the 4th graders in Minnesota who did so well on TIMS might be close to passing some of those tests if they're really testing 7th grade material internationally. Point here is we found an enormous gap between what students needed to know in order to succeed after high school and what they were expected or required to learn in order to earn a high school diploma. Again, we thought that was a significant problem. If improving preparation is critical, then getting the expectations right for what students need to learn in order to be prepared was particularly critical. So we identified a set of state policy actions that we thought would help close this expectations gap. They're very simple to describe. They're very difficult to do. What we think states need to do is, first of all, start with their standards and make sure that those standards are well aligned with the demands of post-secondary education and career. That involves looking at evidence and engaging the business community and the higher ed community in developing those standards. It can't be done by K-12 alone. Second, we thought once the standards are developed and it's clear what students need to learn, they ought to be required to take a curriculum that actually teaches those standards. Not much point in having rigorous standards and course requirements that don't come close to matching them or delivering them. Thirdly, and this will become important to your discussions, immediate discussions, we thought that at least one of the tests that students take when they're in high school, and they take many, one of them ought to tell them whether they are actually meeting those college and career-ready standards. And I'll come back to that in more detail, but this is essential to give students accurate, honest information about where they stand compared to what it's going to take them to succeed, and to give them that information at a time when they and their teachers can do something about it if they lack the skills that they need. Fourth, we thought it was important to shift the mission of the secondary school to ensure that all kids are college and career ready, and therefore to develop a set of accountability indicators that reflect that level of performance. Right now in most states, there are two questions that are asked of high schools by way of accountability, regardless of what the consequences are. One is, how many kids pass the state test, which may or may not measure all the skills that are needed? And secondly, and only recently, how many students who started in 9th grade actually graduated? We think there needs to be a more robust examination of school performance and student preparation in order to really support a move towards college and career readiness. So, having done all this research, we identified initially what we thought would be a small group of states that were committed to working on this policy agenda. And in 2005, at a National Education Summit on High Schools that we did jointly with the Governors Association, governors, business, and K-12 and post-secondary leaders from 13 states joined with us to form the American Diploma Project Network to help states that shared this policy agenda get some support, technical assistance, the support that comes from working together and learning from each other to advance the agenda with a sense of urgency. Today, 34 states in the country, including Minnesota, are part of that network. Collectively, they educate nearly 85% of the public school students in the country. In short, college and career readiness, state by state, has become a national priority. This is a key part of the discussion that's going on in almost every state capital in the country right now. We monitor progress. Each year we do a survey of the states and essentially ask them, have you done anything about those policy items that we've been talking about? And we see tremendous progress in some areas and far less progress in others. In terms of altering, revising, updating standards so that the high school standards are aligned with the demands of college and work, there are now 22 states that have done that, including Minnesota. And another, you know, almost half the states are in the process of or seriously planning to take that work on. So that stuff is moving. States are changing their standards at a fairly rapid rate. There are 20 states plus the District of Columbia, again, including Minnesota, that have changed their course-taking requirements for graduation so that students have to take a rigorous core college and career prep curriculum in order to earn a diploma. That change is coming quite quickly. There has been less progress in terms of the assessment and accountability issues that I talked about a few minutes ago. I'll get into some of those in a bit more detail, but those issues, as you know from your own experience, are harder to deal with, take longer to work through, are more complex substantively and politically, and there's been less progress on that. We're hoping to help states make progress on those issues, but they are more complicated. We are seeing a lot of progress on one fundamental issue. You can't have either a good accountability system or simply good data to help you know what's going on and support improvement if you don't have a data system that can track students through as they progress through the system, ideally from preschool through K to 12 and into higher ed. Only by having that kind of data system that lets you know how well students do at each grade level, what courses they take, you know, a variety of other things, can you really understand the dynamics and progress of the system. There's tremendous progress in states working on that, and I believe you are awaiting, hopefully successfully, a grant from the U.S. Department of Education to support your work in that area. So I know that Minnesota's been hard at work on this and is already pretty far along. So let me I'll give you one other quick set of snapshots of where states stand on some of these issues and then dive into some detail on assessment issues. So this shows you the 22 states that have aligned their high school standards with the demands of college and work. And you can see it's the states are spreading. It's not, you know, a localized phenomena. It's happening throughout the country. 20 states in D.C. now require students to pass a set of rigorous courses in order to earn a high school diploma. The dark blue states here are those that make that curriculum mandatory. Every student's got to take the same core set of courses in order to graduate. The light blue states provide a little bit of an opt-out for students, give them a way to take a less rigorous curriculum. If they and their parents come to school and sign something indicating that they are aware that a less rigorous curriculum will leave them less well prepared for what they'll face after high school. In Indiana, for example, to reinforce that message, students who opt out of their college and career prep curriculum are eligible for less state financial aid if they enroll in post-secondary education. The message from the state is, we'll invest less in you if you invest less in yourself. So there, it's voluntary, but there are some powerful incentives. Yes, ma'am?
Senator Rowland.
Thank you. I'm wondering what percent of parents are willing to sign that type of form, have you found?
Dr. Cohen?
Most of these policies are relatively new and just being phased in, so there's not yet good data on that. I believe in Arkansas, last time I checked, which is about a year ago, as they were phasing it in, they were expecting about 10% to 12% of the students to opt out of that curriculum. And that actually sparked a debate, unresolved at the moment, but sparked a debate as to whether they should make it mandatory and eliminate the opt-out provision. But that's the best data we have now in terms of, you know, percentages of students who opt out. And I don't know if that's a good predictor of what we'll see in 2, 3, 4 years from now, but that's what we've got right now.
Senator Roblin.
What have you found with special education students?
most of these requirements are written in such a manner so that students with IEPs, their IEP trumps these requirements. They continue to follow whatever is in, you know, appropriately in their IEP.
Thank you.
Dr. Cohen, would you say that the light blue states are those states that have that opt out? Is that similar to like a dual track approach?
Not really, although there's some there is some variation from state to state in how they do this. In the main, what they've said is here are the requirements for graduating, and you'll get our standard diploma if you do this. They then, depending on the state, have a couple of types of provisions. So the states that have an opt-out most typically still award students a standard diploma, and you literally have to look at the transcript to see what courses students actually took. That is, a diploma may not signal it. Some cases, some states may have both a standard diploma that reflects their core curriculum and also some honors diplomas that you can earn. So in, I think, both Indiana and Louisiana, if you take the standard college and career prep curriculum and also take some extra CTE courses, right, you can earn a diploma with honors and CTE. If you take some additional college prep courses, you can earn a diploma with, which would typically be more foreign language, for example, or an extra science course, then you can earn a diploma that signifies something above the standard diploma. But these are not systems that basically have a college-bound track with a college diploma and something else with a different diploma. They're very much trying to move away from that while creating, in some cases, a safety valve for students and in other cases an opportunity to show excellence beyond what is already a rigorous level.
Okay. Senator Rovlin.
Thank you. Have any other states done what Minnesota has done? Oddly enough, we have an ACHIEVE program here. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but it's an incentive, a scholarship incentive program for students to take those college preparatory courses in high school, and if they complete a certain curriculum, they are eligible for scholarship money in college. Have any other states incentivized their students to do things like that?
Yes. I think Indiana actually was the first state to do that and had done that over a decade ago. About 2 years ago, the federal government passed a program that provided money to states to do precisely that. So I don't know if the Minnesota program was initiated independent of the federal program or along with it, but in one way or another, just about every state does that now. Some do it solely with federal money. Others do it with their own money as well, and it's targeted to low-income students, which I think is the right way to do it.
Dr. Cohen, do colleges use the type of diploma that students receive for entrance?
It depends. First of all, figuring out what colleges do in the admissions process is something of a challenge, both for researchers and for parents who are trying to help their kids make their way through college. I think what turns out to be the case, I have a daughter who's a freshman in college now and a son who's a college graduate, so this is as much from my own research as it is from, but it's confirmed by all the conversations and discussions I've had with people about this on a policy level. What colleges basically look at is the student's transcript. They want to see what courses they've taken, how rigorous they are. In many cases, they are looking, particularly the more selective institutions, are looking to make sure that the students took the most rigorous courses available. So in some high schools, that's honors courses, and so that counts a lot. In other high schools, there might be a lot of AP courses, in which case the student who took honors courses, someone in the admissions office is asking, why didn't they do more than that? So they're looking at the transcripts more than I think they're looking at the specific diploma. But in states that have, but again, in states like Indiana or Louisiana that have done a good job of making their diploma mean something and working with higher ed to figure that out, they may look more at the diploma But the selective institutions are always going to go to the transcripts because they've got to make choices between students based on you know, performance issues.
Thank you. Dr. Cohen?
Okay.
Yep.
Good. So continuing to give you an overview of how states are dealing with these issues, I pointed out there's a lot of progress in states on raising standards and graduation requirements, less progress in terms of states putting into place assessments that measure these college and career-ready skills. Nine have done that so far, and let me just talk about a couple of them here to begin to give you an illustration of what this might mean. The most interesting case here is California. Let me take a minute or two to lay this out to you because I think it's worth thinking about. Students in California take tests just about every year, in the including a high school graduation test. 11th graders take a state test or a set of state tests that is designed solely for school accountability purposes. This is not the California version of the grad. This is just a test that the state uses to hold students accountable. Shortly after that test was developed, and independent of that, the California State University system, probably the largest of the three higher ed systems in California, created for itself a system-wide set of college readiness standards. That is, they actually did the research and wrote out in some detail what do we expect students to know and be able to do in order to do credit-bearing rather than remedial work in mathematics, for example. And they developed a system-wide placement test, the test that kids take when they are college freshmen, show up at campus, and then discover whether they're really college material or not. Armed with that, those standards and that test, they sat down with the California Department of Education and looked at the 11th grade test and essentially said to them, look, if you will add about 8 or 10, maybe a dozen items to the math test and to the English test, we can use your test to tell students whether they're ready for college-level work. And so 11th graders in California now, when they sit down to take the state's K-12 test, if you will, the 11th grade test, come to a point in the answer booklet where a page says, stop, you're done with this test. But if you're thinking about going to college, particularly a CSU campus, answer the rest of the items. Or, you know, we suggest you do. It's voluntary. Hundreds of thousands of students in California do that. My guess is it's probably about 3/4 or so of the test takers are taking those questions. When they get their results back, they get one of three messages. One is, congratulations, you did really well on the test. You are ready to do college-level work. If you enroll in a CSU campus after you graduate, you are guaranteed to be placed into a credit-bearing course. You won't take another placement test to make that decision. You're ready to do college-level work, and we're telling you that now. Students who didn't do quite that well are basically given a conditional placement into credit-bearing courses. In effect, they're said, you're almost there, or you're there but not as solidly as we'd like. You will be guaranteed placement in a credit-bearing course if, in math, for example, you take and pass another math course in your senior year, and then you'll be exempt from taking a placement test. The third group of students who didn't do well enough, and they're the ones who are the most important in this process, they're basically told you're not ready to do college-level work. That's the bad news. The good news is you have a whole year in high school to make up the skill gaps that have been identified so that when you do go to college, which we hope you will be ready to do college-level work. The CSU system has created web-based tutoring tools for those students to access. They've been working with high schools on a regional basis to create senior-level courses that meet the entrance requirements but will also fill in those skill gaps. In English, for example, a senior year course that is focused on expository writing, because a lot of kids turn out to be weak in that. So the point is, this is a test that students take that is a door opener for them. If they do well, they find out they're ready to do college-level work, and if not, they're getting help to boost their performance in ways that will prepare them for success after high school. So Wayne, I'll tell you this in some detail, because when we talk about having a college-ready measure in high school that tells students whether they're ready to do college-level work, that's the image we've had in mind. It's not just a test. It's a test that is linked to help for kids who need it and just authoritative decisions made by the post-secondary system that guarantees students some opportunities if they're doing well. Contrast that, by the way, with, I suspect, what the situation is here in Minnesota with the grad, and which is a similar situation in every state in the country. The high school tests that states develop, you know, at the K-12 level, nobody in higher ed pays any attention to them at all. They don't know what they measure, or if they do, they think they're not rigorous enough, and often they're right. And so those tests, you know, have no meaning, right, to where students are leaving, you know, going after high school. There is no connection, no seamlessness to the system. It's just two separate testing systems, one for K-12 and a whole separate set of tests for admissions and placement in higher ed. It's more testing than we need. We ought to be able to find a way to make this more seamless. So that's what we've been encouraging states to do, and are seeing some real progress on that. By the way, the other states here, the predominant model is states basically paying for the ACT, since large numbers of students may be taking it already, and they then have to augment or supplement the ACT so it is actually aligned with the state standards, because the ACT is not designed to develop the, you know, to assess the Minnesota standards or the Illinois standards or Colorado standards. So they have to surround that test with another test or some other test item so that it measures the state's standards.
We have several questions. Senator Saltzman first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just maybe a comment and a question is that it's my understanding that the MNSCU colleges, our state colleges and universities here in Minnesota, use an assessment called the AccuPlacer,
mm-hmm.
and that students who enroll in those institutions take that test prior to starting school to find out where they place. And some of us have sort of chatted, and I did talk with our chancellor that, you know, would it, you know, perhaps work for students to take that test maybe even at the end of their sophomore year or middle of their junior year as a way to mm-hmm. assess you aren't making the mark. Let's start doing, you know, this work in high school.
Right.
Then they're out of high school, take the test, and then we find out they aren't prepared. Do you know anything about the AccuPlacer test?
Absolutely, yes, we do. Yes.
And is that maybe something to sort of consider, and I know Senator Roebling is on higher education, and maybe you have some thoughts as well on that.
Okay, Dr. Cohen first.
Yeah, that's a very, very good question. We actually know a lot about the AccuPlacer. The issue that this raises is how do you get tests that meet two criteria. This college readiness criteria, that is, they provide actual useful information about whether kids are ready or not, and they can be used as tools to improve preparation of students while they're in high school. So AccuPlacer solves half of that problem, but not the other half, and here's why. We've done an item-by-item review of AccuPlacer and Compass, which is its sister test from College Board. Those are designed for the purposes that they serve. Kid comes into school freshman year, or they might take this online at home. They are very short, 15-minute, 15-item tests, very narrowly focused to answer one question. Does this kid need to get placed in a remedial course or not? In mathematics, the items that are typically used for that purpose are essentially Algebra 1 items. Very narrow set of algebra, maybe 1 1/4, right, if you know. They don't really measure whether kids have everything they need to succeed. They measure whether a kid can avoid being placed in a remedial course or not. So if you used, depending on how you used it, if you used AccuPlacer for high school students at 10th or 11th grade, you may well convey the erroneous expectation that only the stuff that test narrowly measures is what's really important. right? And you'd wind up narrowing the curriculum as teachers focused on preparing kids for that test. That's the danger in that approach. An alternative to that, which I was going to get to in a minute anyway, would be to use a set of end-of-course exams. In this case, in mathematics, it would be an Algebra 2 exam that could serve this function, right? Because the skills that you need to succeed in college, at least in a, you know, in a college algebra course, a first-year credit-bearing course, you need a pretty solid foundation in what's typically taught in Algebra 2. So you could use an end-of-course exam in Algebra 2 to tell Minsky whether kids are well-prepared or not. That would also have the advantage of actually reinforcing what's taught in Algebra 2 as important, and would create some level of consistency in what's taught in that course throughout the state if this were a statewide test. That is an approach that I think is more likely to both provide students information on where they stand and create the dynamics in the K-12 system that's likely to lead to improvement. So you're not just measuring for the sake of measuring, but it's got the ability to drive improvement as well.
Senator Roebling?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was intrigued by the California model that you were talking about and the development of an online course by the college system that helps students who have not done well on the test. Mm-hmm. And I am wondering, is it available for students to take prior to taking their test their junior year? Do they wait until they're, mm-hmm. It's indicated that they haven't done well, and is it free, and how accessible is it to them?
Good questions. I've asked those recently. First of all, it's an online tutorial. It's not a whole course, at least not now. And for the moment, it's apparently not available to students from outside of California. That's partly because I think they want to make sure they have high quality, you know, develop really high quality materials before they distribute it widely. And my guess is they're also thinking about the financial aspects of that, but don't think they have figured that out yet. It would be, I'm going to jump ahead of myself or totally blow the presentation, I'm not sure which, but one of the things that's happening is states develop their own college-ready standards. Is as we've looked across states, I'll skip ahead to a slide on this soon, as we've looked across states, there is emerging a common core of college-ready expectations across the states. Minnesota's definition of college-ready math and Michigan's definition of college-ready math, and for that matter, Arkansas's definition of college-ready math, all have a very rigorous common core to them. They are literally not all over the map. They are converging. So if states are converging around standards, which is an unprecedented development in standards in this country, if that convergence is occurring, it begins to make it possible for states to collaborate on tools that are supposed to be aligned to standards. So now I'm totally going to blow this. First of all, this map shows you that there are, in math, 16 states, including Minnesota, whose college-ready standards all have a common core. Right, there is a convergence. And that's because they're all asking the same question. What's the evidence in our state about what kids need to know when they complete high school to succeed in college and work? First of all, you often rely on national evidence. But secondly, ready for work in Minnesota, ready for work in Massachusetts, ready for work in Michigan, it's the same stuff. Ready for college in those states requires the same stuff. It's not like these things are, you know any geographic boundaries. So convergence on state standards. This map shows you that there are 15 states, including Minnesota, that have been participating in the development and piloting of a common end-of-course exam in Algebra 2. Piloting. No one's decided, or very few states have decided to use it yet. Some are and have statutory authority. You're clearly in the point of trying to figure out whether you're even going to do end-of-course tests, let alone this one, but you've had an opportunity through the commissioner to begin to learn what end-of-course testing is about. This came about because a group of states in 2004 that were part of this ADP network came to Achieve and said, look, we're going to follow your advice and require kids to take Algebra 2. We're afraid that if that's all we do in maybe half the schools in our state, Algebra 2 will look suspiciously like Algebra 1. We need something that is going to create some level of consistency in content and rigor. And a number of the commissioners back then came to the view that an end-of-course test would be a good tool for that. The best model of that, by the way, you know, longest-standing of the New York State Regents exams. End-of-course exams drive a common curriculum across the state. So these commissioners said, we think we each need an end-of-course exam for Algebra 2 to accomplish that same purpose, but then went on to say, we don't want our own Algebra 2 test. We don't think Algebra 2 ought to be different from state to state. So could G work with us to develop a common Algebra 2 exam based on a common set of standards that are driven by what Achieve has learned about college and career readiness. So it's taken several years. The test was piloted for the first time last spring to 90,000 students in, I think, about a dozen of the 15 states. Be given again this fall. There will be an online version, which can produce very rapid turnaround. And it is designed to be a college-ready measure. We're doing the research now to enable us to work with the states to set a cut score that says if students score at this level, their odds of the probability that they will succeed in a college algebra course is, say, 75% or better. I mean, we haven't figured the numbers out yet, but the idea would be to set a score that's associated with a very high probability of success in college courses. That builds on the California model. It just makes it an end-of-course test rather than a end-of-grade, you know, an 11th grade test. And the states are seeing quite a bit of potential for this as a tool to overall promote readiness and improve performance in math.
Senator Fulby.
Thanks, Mr. Chairperson. You know, we've seen for a number of years this 30%. I mean, that's been out there for a number of years, 30%.
Remediation
yeah. for students in post-secondary. And I'm hopping back to your California example, Dr. Cohen, that you said we are seeing progress. Do you have any data on that, or has it been measurable at all at this point with this progress that you're seeing?
We're seeing progress on the policy front.
Okay.
Right, on the remediation rate in California, this has only been in place for a couple of years. They haven't yet generated and shared data. I mean, they soon should be able to track the performance of students who took the test in 11th grade, didn't do well, got some help in 12th grade. How are they doing now? I mean, that is the ultimate test of this. I would be surprised if they don't show, maybe not in the first year, but, you know, got to get these systems in place. But if they can't show that they've reduced the remediation rate among students who didn't do well on the test, we should all be worried, because it seems like a promising strategy. If that doesn't work, we got to go to a plan B. It may not be the only strategy. In fact, it is surely not the only strategy to reduce remediation. But the fact that you can't, I mean, the notion of early identification of kids who are having difficulties and high-quality intervention and supports for them is a formula that typically works. So it ought to work in this case.
Thank you.
Okay. Senator Olson.
Thank you. Dr. Cohen, has there been any work in trying to determine whether it is the fact that some students have difficulty in achieving the standards at the time they take the course,
mm-hmm.
or whether it's an issue of retention? For example, if we have Algebra 1 and 2, and it appears that that's going to be offered and be taken in 8th and 9th grade, and then we test
mm-hmm.
in 11th grade, there's an assumption that somehow once you've had that piece, that you carry it with you, or even beyond that,
right.
to when colleges are going to take their pretests. So do we have any indication of, if you were going to look at end-of-course exams,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Whether we have any track record that doing well then is correlated to doing well in the pre-service or the pre-entry into college,
mm-hmm.
or what is there something missing here? It's the, you know, the rigor meeting reality.
Yeah.
Is that we're talking about going back to the end of course exams.
Right.
But if they haven't retained it, they're not necessarily going to avoid remediation.
Right.
And so, and some are concerned that we don't sacrifice the standards, but we, we chopped those standards up all through 4 years.
Right.
And I know some people may be able to retain it, but I don't know that our system really helps to kind of nurture continuing that whole principle that what you don't use, you lose.
Right.
That there's something ongoing that would help help you keep that active in your brain, and at least till the point of the college takes over and you determine what you really need to know, and you enter the world of work.
But you raise a very good, very important question. The short version of it might be: when rigor takes a break, what happens? Here's what we know. Several things come together. Number one, taking more rigorous courses helps, right? The more rigorous the coursework you've done in high school, the better your chances of success. That's number one. Number two, in mathematics in particular, the recency of taking rigorous work matters a whole lot. Put it slightly differently, no matter when kids take Algebra 2 and no matter how well they do on the test, you want to make sure that those kids are either taking mathematics or taking a course that uses mathematics in their senior year. Otherwise, they will lose a lot by the time they get to college. Now, that could mean that if kids take Algebra 2, for example, in 10th grade, it could mean that over the next couple of years, a couple of things they could do. They could take, AP Calculus or AP Stat, regular calculus. They could be taking a science or engineering course that uses math and reinforces what they've learned. They could, of course, start dual enrollment and start taking college-level math. It's a whole range of options there. The option that you most want to discourage is, took Algebra 2, I passed the test, can coast for the next 2 years and not take any more math. Right? That ought not be an option.
Just one follow-up on that?
Senator Olson.
I was interested in what you were talking about, California doing online tutorials, but maybe what we need as a part of the system is something that's online and accessible that says keeping your edge. In other words, it isn't you're trying to remediate. It's just how do you hang on and keep up kind of applying and using.
Yep.
And that may be true in several areas. I think Senator Saltzman and I have been kind of hitting hard on the importance of early learning of reading and the mastering the skills of the reading process so that you can be free from then on to building the understanding and the comprehension, the vocabulary, and all that you need. Those elements are something you're always using.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think in reading, if you once get that foundation, you don't have this greater risk of losing it. But in math and some of these kinds of in other areas, you don't necessarily day-to-day use them in your life. And so until you're confronted with that situation, you really are losing ground. And I would hope that somewhere along the way there might be a way to fit that into our packaged model that we use for high school, that you get this class and then you can kind of expel that out of your mind while you're concentrating on the next one. I mean, I'm speaking from experience.
Well, I think you're making an excellent point. And quick observation, there are two developments that will make it easier, right, to create the kind of online environment that you're talking about. One is the growth of common state standards makes a different kind of marketplace for the development of that, right? Developing one set of tools or one package that can be used in lots of places as opposed to, doing something slightly different 50 times over, or creating the equivalent of a online textbook that's as fat as the textbooks that get produced now. I think there's real opportunity there. And I also think there's growing interest in the foundation community and the entrepreneurial community to figure out ways to develop tools, particularly online tools, often open source, that are widely accessible, at no cost, for precisely the kind of things and purposes that you're talking about. As long as the foundations continue to have money in their portfolios, I think they'll make some investments in this over the coming years. I think that there is tremendous interest in trying to figure out ways to do the kind of things that you're talking about.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. I know, Dr. Cohen, you have to leave. Did you say leave at 10:15?
10:15.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I don't know how much additional information you want to go through, but Senator Bonhoeff has a question, and then we'll move back to your presentation.
I would suggest go with the questions. There's only one or two things that I haven't touched on that I would want to sort of put in front of you, but conversation seems – if this is meeting your needs, keeping the conversation going is fine with me.
Thank you, Senator Chair. Dr. Cohen, what kind of coordination have you seen taking place between the K-12 environment and post-secondary? Because one of the things I notice is I have one child who's graduated from college, two that are in it right now, is that while, you know, we were insistent about what they took in high school, they got to college, you know, literally zero math. And now, for example, my daughter's a senior. Oh, there was a math requirement. So as a senior, she took it and she almost flunked it. And, you know, it was because of not having any math between the time she graduated high school and did quite well and now being a senior in college. So it seems to me there's also a disconnect between the post-secondary environment and the E-12 environment.
There is. There's a huge disconnect. Some of our work with states is beginning to close that when you can get college faculty and system folks and high school faculty and the sort of K to 12 state leadership having a common, you know, working together to figure out what the students need to know to be ready for college. What is the skill set? That's a step in the right direction. And we find, by the way, when you get the faculty together talking to each other, the math, you know, secondary and post-secondary faculty, once they get over the initial institutional barriers, you know, this sort of sense, we're really not supposed to be talking to you. Once they get past that, it's actually a wonderful conversation because they really get into depth and find they've got a lot to share and a lot to learn from each other. But there is still a hugely long way to go to communicate to parents and prospective students what they need. So you can find the graduation. You may or may not be able to find the college admissions requirements on a college website. You'd have to dig hard to find what the college graduation requirements are on the college website. And none of that will talk about what you actually need to know and be able to do to get into college or not. And I know that because my daughter just finished her first semester at college. So I looked at countless websites with her, and that information is just not accessible any place. So the kind of information that's needed is we're not close. Let me just mention one thing that I know that's going on in Minnesota that is actually breaking that. I think this is at an institution in the Bemidji area, but I can't remember the name of it. There's a regional program, I think, where high school students can send their essays to basically be graded by college faculty. And so what they get back is some indication of whether their writing is really up to college-level standards. It's a little costly to do that. Someone's got to pay the faculty to do this grading. But, boy, what a useful way for a high school kid to get a sharp but safe dose of reality as to whether the stuff they're turning out for high school, which may or may not satisfy the demands of the high school teacher, actually is going to measure up to where they think they're going next. I mean, there are things like that that could be done that would very immediately communicate more information than we do now.
Actually, Dr. Cohen, I think that's Bemidji State University, and I believe the actual students that are in college, that are in literature and do the work under the supervision of the faculty, and it's a very helpful program. It's online. You can submit it, and quite easy. Senator Clark. And then Senator
Kind of building off of what Senator Bonhoeff was asking, you know, we've had a couple of seminars or whatever you want to call it, conversations about really what we could be doing more in the area of STEM. And one of the examples was have kids take math their last year in high school regardless. And I was thinking as you were talking, our son actually had he was in a middle school situation that he actually was a freshman when he had Algebra 2. And it's not just about the math in college, then. It could be about econ. It could be about science that you needed. It could be about – and even thinking about myself, you know, there was that gap when you took it. And it's like, geez, how do you remember this? And what Senator Olson was talking about the retention and the applicability. So, you know –
not that we want to tell school districts about how to do things, but when we think about catching remediation needs, but also the advanced practices, there could be good reasons why somebody who's a senior could be taking classes at the college or something where we're actually, because that's my other feedback from our sons was, geez, you know, I wasn't really getting the great opportunities that I had with post-secondary. I wish that I'd taken better advantage of them now that they're seeing how much college is costing, among other things. So, I mean, is that the kind of thing that we should also be exploring just because people may have, it's kind of hard to ferret through all of that?
I think you want to do two things at once. You want to be really clear on, in one sense, you want to make a sharp distinction as to what you need to know and be able to do to be ready to do college-level work. You want to be clear about that. But you otherwise want to be open to blurring the boundaries between the institution of high school and the institution of college so that there ought to be lots of different ways that students, while in high school, can experience college and college-level work, whether that's AP or IB or dual enrollment or some of all of the above. But there's growing evidence that particularly the least advantaged students, the students who've been struggling, oftentimes see the relevance of the academic work if they take it in a college course. First of all, it just feels different. I'm in college, right? This is a big deal. But it also often has a bit more applied, bit more hands-on focus to it. So I think you want to be clear about the skills students need to do that level of work so you're not just sending kids off to college courses ill-prepared, but you want to get as many kids to have that kind of experience as they can.
Well, just as a quick follow-up,
Senator,
I guess
Clark?
The question is, should they be required to take math their last year in high school, whether it's at college or on? Should we be looking at, look, we can actually solve a lot of our challenges, whether it's memory lapses, whether it's ongoing applicability, whether it's remediation or it's advanced application? I don't have a bill. I'm not suggesting we do it. But is that the kind of thing that we should be encouraging to have?
I would think seriously about that, and I would make it either math or courses that use
math.
And I'd be pretty I'd sort of want to start out pretty flexibly in terms of what fit that description, not to water it down, but to open up possibilities to really encourage courses that are applied, that give kids a sense of what this stuff means in the real world. There could be CTE courses that would do that, for example.
Sure.
Okay. Before we take another question, I just want to recognize Commissioner Segrin is here, and I'd like to just invite her to join Dr. Cohen. And I just would like... Commissioner, if you could kind of frame the issue that the problem that we need to solve in probably this session, and I think maybe go from there. But we have one more question that we'll get to, and that's Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Cohen, I was just thinking about a particular student. And I noticed as we've been discussing here that your presentation says making college and career readiness, but we've really been talking about college readiness.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking about that student, and I've talked to my math teachers, and they go, John Doe does not belong in Algebra 2. And because he's taking Algebra 2, which he hates school now, and now he cannot take the welding class or the woodworking class, and he's losing the connectedness. And while I'm all for raising rigor, I'm worrying about this population in the school districts that I didn't take Algebra 2, and I barely passed Algebra 1, by the way. But I just worry about making school so uncomfortable for this particular group of students. What do we do with those?
Excellent question. Thank you for bringing that up.
I think there are a couple things you do. One is, I actually believe your statute requires Algebra 2 or its equivalent, I think. And we're beginning to see some states that are developing courses that are that have an awful lot of Algebra 2 content in it, have greater emphasis on statistics, though, and greater emphasis on the application,
yeah,
of the content. So it's a bit more relevant, if you will. And you want to be careful not to water stuff down, but you could, I think, create different versions of Algebra 2 that would retain the core stuff, but teach it differently, and particularly in a more applied manner. And I think you'd want to do that, and in good CTE programs, for example, they would have career-oriented courses that would, at a minimum, help demonstrate the relevance of the math, right, in whatever field the student's interested in, and hopefully reinforce it. They're not going to be the place to teach the math. The welding teacher is not going to turn into an Algebra 2 teacher, but there might be ways to help students see, as they're working on projects that require welding, what the mathematical component of that is that might make it more relevant for students.
That's a key question, though, for us as we push those standards higher and higher, and as pressure out there to budgetary pressures on school districts force fewer and or allow fewer and fewer options technical type programs. And I know Senator Olson and I have, this has been an issue too, but it becomes kind of a balancing area because, I think we have to provide this broad spectrum of educational opportunities and kind of raise everybody up at the same time.
Senator Olson. Yeah, thank you, Senator Shump. Minnesota we've started down that path of recognizing where standards of our academic standards are actually being achieved in courses that are applied in some of the agriculture and other ones. And I think there's going to be more coming of that. And I think that helps to address so that students could take an applied course, but they are going to achieve some of these standards. It may, mm-hmm. Whether we can embed all of Algebra 2 into one thing, or whether we're a little more flexible and more related to reality in terms of how these things are used. I think we have to do that, or we're going to disengage these kids. They lose interest, and then we lose them altogether. And I think that is a big mistake as well.
I think as you do that, you want to do two things. One is make sure that that part of the post-secondary system to which the CTE students are going to wind up going for further technical training, right? You want them at the table to make sure that as you think of alternatives, you don't water down what they're actually going to need, mm-hmm. right, when they go further in their own field, and the math demands in technical fields are high and growing. So I think this is perhaps more of an issue of relevance and of rigor, if you will, but you want some help in sorting that out. You don't want to make ill-informed decisions on that. Yes. The other thing is you think about creating some kind of courses. Goes back to a point you made before. If every district has to do this on their own in this budget environment, they can't. If there's some way to pool their resources and state resources to create high-quality courses, online tools, et cetera, I mean, in this budget environment, we've all got to be thinking differently. We can't just assume we're going to operate the same way we always have, just shrink for a while and then come back to where we were. I think there's something much more fundamental going on that's going to require a different kind of response that builds on and takes advantage of the growing willingness we're seeing for states and I think districts to collaborate with each other as long as it's not forced on them, and to use the web as a way of creating and delivering tools and instruction that is cheaper. It doesn't replace teachers, but in a tight budget environment, you got to think about different ways to get this done.
Senator Saltzman, and then we'll turn to the commissioner.
Just a very brief note, Mr. Chair, is that we had a very good discussion in our business committee on Monday with the Governor's Workforce Development Council, and this issue came up. And Senator Metzen is very interested in working with the Education Committee to sort of, explore this, because we did talk about internships or how we are really engaging young people who maybe don't think of themselves as academic but are brilliant and want to be able to apply these skills. So I know that he may be reaching out to you, because I did share that this was something that you were particularly interested in, and he even talked about assigning a work group to perhaps explore some of these issues.
Thank you. And Commissioner, we have this predicament that if we want to look forward to a higher level test or a new test, that you have to start a 2-year planning preparation. And so decisions on any new testing probably need to be made now if we're going to implement them down the road. So, Commissioner, can you kind of outline the situation?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the opportunity to kind of share our dilemma, if you will. As Senator Wigger said a couple of months ago, he did have a hearing about the grad. And at that time, I said we certainly are willing to look at a short-term solution. But what we are also is facing us is a long-term solution. If the legislature does not want to continue with the grad, or if we want to place tests in a different year, or if we want to look at a different solution overall for our assessment system going forward, we really need to make some decisions very quickly, because we are also under current law, which says that we have to take our new standards, our new math standards, and create our new Series 3 math tests. And our law says that we have to do that for our 11th grade and embed the grad. And because of the angst that we all are having about having a comprehensive 11th grade math test, where students have to remember things that they may have learned in 9th grade for this comprehensive test, I suggested that we start looking at some solutions for us and some signal to us of what we should be doing so that we don't spend money twice. If the legislature does not want us to continue doing this, then please help us with direction as to how our long-term solution and assessment should look. What has been a wonderful opportunity is that at the time that we started looking at this, we had, as Mr. Cohen had said, we had been participating, just exploring really, an Algebra 2 end of course concept. We only had very few students. We had 200 students that actually were tested, because we frankly don't have the money to participate, but they allowed us graciously to come in and bring experts from higher ed and from K-12 to at least work with them on what this assessment should look like, and we were able to give feedback on that. However, as we also have received a grant for technical assistance, as Mike Cohen said, about what should our assessments and our whole process look like for the future, and they're helping us survey, you know, where are the components that we need for, say, early learning, our early warning signs for kids. What should our high schools look like? Just lots of different things that they're looking at. We formed a state team, and that consists of legislators and business people and academics, that we're going to be continuing those discussions. And because we had that expertise, I said, well, and Senator Wigger had charged us with coming together, a small group, to kind of talk in a non-threatening environment about what maybe we can do. So we brought in Susan Beaudry and Elliot Regenstein, and they're over here, and they're part of the technical expertise, as well as Mike Cohen, that has at least given us some ideas of what's going on nationally, talk about what are the choices for testing and assessment, what should an accountability system look like. If you have motivated conditions, or stakes for a test, high, medium, low stakes, what do they look like? How do we, if we're going to have assessments, how do we get students to take them seriously but not have this, you know, you must pass this test or you die, you know. So we have been trying to grapple with that in this small group, and our small group has kind of come to the conclusion that it would make sense to have 2 end-of-course tests, conceptually, a geometry and Algebra 2. We know we have 3 years of math that are required for graduation. Then we could have some consistency. We could have, and then we could talk about motivated conditions, and those could be a percentage of a course that would apply to, you know, your passing of the course. We're not even there yet, except to just have the concept. Would you like to do end of course in the math, because it is a sequential kind of subject area? If that's true, then we need to stop what we're doing and transfer to developing end-of-course tests. I did ask our staff to tell me what that would look like and also to have quick turnaround time so that our teachers and our students would know right away at the end of that course how they did, so that for instructional purposes for the teachers, they know maybe where they've missed the mark or where they're doing well, and for students to know if they need to do more work, remediation work in high school to prepare for college and careers, are if they're on track and they can take some, you know, subsequent courses in the math area. So we have a cost estimate that will be part of the budget to have a computerized two end-of-course tests. And so we put together some information on that. The dilemma, of course, is that we would like to have the short-term and the long-term solution put together so that we can move forward and have this done. And I understand that there is concern about moving too fast and making, you know, big decisions like this. But we need to have some direction as we go forward with end of course. Or the other option really is to have a comprehensive test at lower grade levels. The I guess the downside on that is that many math consultants that we talk with are concerned that this is not really measuring college readiness then. So you don't have an indication that kids really are college ready. So if our goal is to do that and to have that information for students all along the way, and we want to move to this more positive direction with testing, then we really, you know, need to make those decisions. So there's a lot of big things for you to think about. I think that Mr. Cohen really outlined very well kind of the policies and the principles that we should be thinking about as a state. But we need to have something by the end of February as far as an answer. And if we're going to do that and there's cost, then we really need to, have some guarantee that we're going to have some funding to do this. We're just in the preliminary stages of looking at those costs and trying to figure this all out. So we want to continue working with you. We know, and I know as a former legislator, that we generally never pass something with a cost until the end of the session. So this would be a very big precedent-setting question for us to grapple with. But we need to have some solution to this.
Thank you, Commissioner. And I realize we only have 5 minutes, and I just want to give Dr. Cohen, you know, a chance for some summary comments on kind of the issues that you've presented, and you've given us some ideas, certainly a number of different options. It might be nice to kind of give us a summary of what you see.
Sure. So a couple points I think. One is I want to underscore the point I made at the very beginning about the short-term dilemma versus the long-term issues, and it's clear you're going to have to work your way through a short-term dilemma, but just remember that the reason you did that is because of the mounting evidence that kids were earning diplomas and not being prepared for what comes next. So there's always a temptation to say we need to make it easier for kids to walk across the stage and get their diploma. The pressures to do that are clear. The pressures to make sure that they're prepared for what they do after they get off the stage and go someplace else are not going to be as evident to you, but you need to keep that in mind as you think through short and long term. Second thing I'd say is if the discussion is in fact turning towards end of course assessments, I think that could be a very powerful solution for you. It does provide a more positive role for testing. It's tied to the courses that kids are taking. You could see it feed back into curriculum and instruction so that the courses can be improved each year, and it you can still get a college readiness measure out of it. You won't be under pressures to sort of lower the bar. You do need to think about the motivating conditions, but I think there are a variety you can come up with that will stop short of saying to a kid, if you don't pass an Algebra 2 test, you're never going to graduate from high school, which doesn't strike me as the right way to do this. It could count towards a course grade. You could have a score for college readiness and a score for graduating, you know, and maybe ratchet that up over time as the system capacity builds. Whole variety of ways to solve the problem of how do you motivate kids to take a test. Kids are motivated to take final exams all the time. So I think you could figure that out if you get the right kind of stakes for it. Third thing I'd say, which would be the opening of a longer conversation for another time, is you need to think not only about testing but accountability as well for the schools. And you don't want nor need to rest all the weight of accountability just on the testing system that you come up with. You also ought to be looking at course-taking patterns. How many kids in each school are actually taking a rigorous curriculum? How many students are earning college credits? How many students in the ninth grade are earning enough credits to progress towards the sophomore year and be on track for graduation? There's a broader set of indicators you ought to be thinking about that's not immediately on your plate to worry about now, but it ought to get there. It ought to at least be in the back of your minds as you're wrestling with the testing issues, and we're prepared to help you think about that. We've actually put out some reports on that. Susan Bodery from the Achieve team and Elliot Regenstein from Ed Council are prepared to provide all kinds of information, advice, experience from states on that as you move forward. So I just wanted to note that that ought to be something that you think about as you move forward.
Okay. Very good. And we'll probably be in touch and work with you. Because I would like to try to maybe encourage Senator Wieger's group to kind of give us kind of a give the committee a kind of a summary sheet of options, and I really like the idea of working more closely with the higher ed community, MNSCU or whoever. So that we can kind of bring that connection closer together and encourage the a smoother movement into the secondary education.
That point.
So yes, and then I want to thank Dr. Cohen and thank Commissioner Segrin for coming and kind of giving us a very good summary and lots of information to chew on. So thank you very much.
Thank you for the opportunity to do this.
Yeah. Just before you leave the table, Mr. Chair and Commissioner or Dr. Cohen, but do you have the sense that higher ed is willing to accept a rigorous end-of-course exam and transcript versus some later measure of kind of ignoring that retention thing for the moment? Are they willing to accept that, or what is the commitment that they're willing to make at this point?
Mr. Chair and Senator Olson, there's a couple of things that are going on in our state right now. We have this new institute that is engaging both higher education, K-12, and our legislators and business people. We have a state team that will be talking. One of the things that we'll be looking at is this kind of seamless way of signaling to one another that our students are college ready, or if not, you know, what are the remediation things that we need to be thinking about. The other thing is our P16 partnership actually has a work group that is ongoing right now, and I think Cindy, are you on that work group? Cindy Christ is on that work group, and they are also looking at defining college readiness. They're looking at things like, I think, Accuplacer and ACT admissions tests. They're looking at, and I think Mike mentioned that there are ways now where you can actually look at the Accuplacer, ACT, and then actually look back at your own tests that you have. And if we had an Algebra 2, for example, we know that that's a real strong indication if a student passes that and passes it at a strong grade level, if you are, you know, grade or cut score, that they would be college ready. So I think all of that work is going on right now, and it's just great that everything has kind of come together with kind of these national experts, with what the P16 partnership is doing, and then, you know, some of the other work that we've already kind of started. So yes, there is a table set now, and it will probably take a little time, but we think we will move there. As Mike said, we are really one of the states that is a leader in a lot of this stuff and a lot of this discussion, and oftentimes you all are working and passing things that you don't even know are really just doing all these great things. You know, we pass this stuff, and it is just the impetus that has let us go as agency to work on these things with you. So sometimes we need to kind of pat ourselves on the back and say, we are doing good things, and all of you as leaders have really been a part of it. So and just having this this help is really important too. So we're really looking forward to working with all of you, and giving you feedback as we go along.
Senator Blair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I have appreciated learning from your comments today, Dr. Conan. Commissioner, I just have a clarifying question.
Uh-huh.
As I heard your remarks, it sounds to me like what you're saying is you do not want us to make temporary fixes to the grad rule if, in fact, we're going to go with an end-of-course model, that you would just as soon we come to closure with regard to our strategy so that we're not doing things twice. Is that what I'm hearing?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, what I'm saying is that we need to have a short-term solution and we need to have a long-term solution. And that they need to be linked if we're going to move forward. We shouldn't do one without the other, that we need to know what our kind of long-term strategy is. So as we're moving forward, they really need to be put together, and then so that then we know what to do and to go forward this year to start developing for the long term. If we put this off to the end of the year, we're going to be way behind in trying to develop anything and get moving on it. It's just going to put us probably 2 years behind in what we're working on. And we can't afford to stop this work. I mean, we would really be going backwards. So it is critical, but we can work through it thoughtfully. We've got plenty of expertise to help us make those decisions. And we don't need all of the details. We don't need to have everything worked out about everything. But we do need to know if we need to do end of course, if you want to do something different, if you want to keep the grad, all of those things. But we need to figure that out, because we can do this little short term fix, but it's not really the best answer. We really need to have the long term too.
And we have kept you 5 minutes beyond when you're supposed
to
leave. So thank you very much. And that will be it for the committee today. Is there any other discussion that tomorrow we have early childhood? Senator Wieger?
Yes, Mr. Chair, just to repeat, we will be having the meeting Friday. If any of you would like to share feedback prior to that, let me know. We will have options available. We look forward to a committee hearing on the short and long-term application later. I wanted to let you know, too, that the whole aspect of early learning, I think, needs to be a part of this whole equation, and obviously higher learning as well, and it underscores the importance of us being a part of a P16 or P20 council. Four of us on this committee are a part of higher education, and clearly, the dialogue between those two committees, as well as business and industry, is very, very important, and we'll continue to have those joint discussions.
Thank you, Senator Weir. Any other? Senator Dahl?
Real quick. Thank you, Mr. Chair. If we do end up adding another test, could we get rid of two others? I mean, if I tell if I tell my teachers that we're going to be adding tests, that's a real concern. So,
well, Senator Dahl, you bring up a good point, and I think we would like to have at least take the time to have a clear vision, and I hear the same thing. There's a lot of time and a lot of money that goes, a lot of days and a lot of money that goes into the testing, and I think over the previous number of years, we've kind of gone down this track with testing, and now we're maybe getting a better understanding and more information from what's going on in the nation, in other states. And so I'd like to do it right, and obviously it doesn't mean just layering on more tests. Senator Wigner?
Mr. Chair, that's an excellent point. And Senator Dahl, we need to streamline this process. And Tom Doerr, the president of Ed Minnesota, he made a point of being at our recent meeting that we had at the department yesterday on this, was very engaged with the discussion. There was another rep at the work group last week representing the teachers, because ultimately, if there isn't that buy-in and the reality of what we're talking about here, it's very ineffective and, in fact, counterproductive. So it's an excellent point that we're very aware of.
Committee is adjourned.